Everything I said here is parochial. As you know very well, I have very parochial. That's the shortcoming that I accept, but it's part of the limitation of this particular situation. I realize that I have to concentrate on the Department of Chemistry at the expense of the science division. Because that I couldn't do it, becoming involved in the academic complexity. But that's a history that you know better than I do, and I really stay out of it in this narrative. It was semi-imposed upon me, I think, by the circumstance. I don't think my personality, makeup, or genetics indicated that I should be a specialist, narrow-minded specialist. Is that it was a conscious decision of an institution that did not exist. The complexity of science in 1969. What I could do physically and intellectually. If I became involved and tried to spread into the division of science, you remember the elephant dream of Chicago.
Yes, right.
I was neither for it or against it. I had no particular partisan approach. It was a purely pragmatic decision. I said the laboratory had to be set up. The publishing had to get started, the grant recruitment had to be started, the personnel recruitment had to be started, etc. I could not play the tie and sweatshirt and jacket role in the front office.
There were certain constraints.
There were certain constraints.
Yes.
I accepted them and set out to work under these pragmatic boundary conditions. Later on, I would say 10 years later, it was a habit.
Yeah.
And then, but that's a personal analysis of retroactive on my part.
Right.
You understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
It was really, I could have gone either way.
Yeah.
But first I created it. And then after 10 years, it became a habit. I would say it's a little bit, like Jimmy Carter. You know what I'm trying to say? Hands on versus the Reagan administration. My hands were on the research path continuously.
You were fundamentally an experimentalist.
Fundamentalist,
yes.
From then on,
right.
And of course at a certain point, this may or may not look like the right thing to do 15 or 20 years later. But whether it should or shouldn't, that's the way it evolved in my particular case.
Right.
Now, that of course, colored later on by detachment from some of the academic politics involved in the growth of the department. So I have very little to say about that. You connected after a certain period. I saw you a few times during that period. But today what I'm trying to do is be concrete in terms of a building block.
Well, that's good. That's what we need to have about the early days.
Exactly. What building block?
How we got started.
How we got started.
Right.
And also to put some facts into the story so it doesn't appear as if I am boasting about anything here. I'm just giving you the facts as you can see them from the publication. I'm very fond of the story of the first paper, because I think see the first phrase is rather wholesome. I like the wholesome a lot, but I'm technically here. And in fact, I had a cabin in the hills of Columbia County, where the three states is, New York, Massachusetts, and
Connecticut.
Connecticut, near Claverack, near Hillsdale, on the Taconic Parkway.
Oh, yeah.
All right? Hillsdale was the closest town. I had a cabin which I had bought when I was in Columbia. We kept it. A beautiful cabin called Silver Hill. And I used to go with Lena Olsen on weekends. He liked the area there very much. Copeland Lake. Not very far from Tanglewood.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
I mentioned that parenthetically. So, the relationship between the administration and the faculty was very close.
In those days.
In those days, yeah. But now, I stop the digression in connection with the early development of the teaching research postdoc publication recruitment. I want to beg here, the first divisional council that I attended was in October 1959. This is not to be confused with the public meeting.
No, right.
That was serious business now.
Yeah.
That was referred to as a senior man there, I think.
Right.
And there were some very interesting intellect popping there. There was a visiting committee, which I can't place very well, that was sticking its nose into our business right at that point. Do you remember what that visiting committee in the history?
Well, I came in 62,
okay,
in September, and we were to have a meeting of the Middle States Association's visiting committee.
Okay.
They were to come and look at that was the first review.
Okay. What is that?
That was 62.
That's 62?
Yeah.
Well, what was it doing? Oh, yeah, I must have had it somewhere in my diary, the visiting committee.
You could have had one from the, strictly from the Chemical Society, American Chemical Society, but the overall review of the institution was first done in 62.
Okay, so reading from my curriculum vitae, we're now at the end of 59. So maybe I will
follow the question.
Follow the question.
Right.
Any department rank position? What year did you come? What institution did you come?
You handle that.
Why did you come?
What did you come? Because I was made full professor. After 1 year as associate professor, I didn't like Chicago.
You say you didn't like Chicago?
No, I didn't like the city. You've been to IIT, haven't you? South Chicago?
I haven't been to IIT. I was born in Chicago, but only stayed five years, so I don't remember.
It was a very, very difficult place to live in South Chicago.
Right.
What was your understanding of the person behind the creation of Stony Brook? That's important, because I really, in spite of that cryptic answer I gave to the previous one, when I talked to Olson, the word College of Science kept coming up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that appealed to me. What was the vision being transformed into? What was the vision being transformed into reality? I don't understand that question. The vision was not transformed into reality. The College of Science grew into a full university.
Right.
So that, I don't know the wording, it's confusing.
Well, the early purpose, as stated, was to train teachers of mathematics and science for the secondary schools. That was, in a sense, I think, the camel's nose under the tent, because they changed that purpose very shortly, thanks to a four-year liberal arts college. And then shortly after, in 60, comes the first master plan, which states that there will be four university centers, and one will be on Long Island at Stony Brook. By that time, Ward Novo had made his gift of land.
So I felt that the original speech given to me by Olson in 59 did not check with what was happening 3 years later. But of course, by then he may not even have been there.
He wasn't.
I think he left. Now, number eight, give us your impressions of Stony Brook when you first came. It wasn't Stony Brook, it was Oyster Bay, a lovely area. But I immediately bought a house in Stony Brook. A house
in Stony Brook?
Oh, yes. In fact, first I rented a house in Mill River Road in Oyster Bay.
Yes.
And found a place for the two postdocs, or for one, the Indian, next to it. And then my wife and I went to Stony Brook, found a beautiful house overlooking the Sound, beautiful house, bought it. Put the Indian in the house, and left there. And the Yanomami colony there, that was very useful because, you know, we stayed there for what, 2 years. Then I commuted to Stony Brook. I loved the town of Stony Brook. The campus, there was no campus.
No.
So the people, the leadership, yeah, the leadership was very interesting. I was in complete agreement with the spirit with which it was being conducted. Mm-hmm. I mean, in fact, I liked the atmosphere very much. Mm-hmm. I think that Olson was very, very well intentioned, and I felt very unusual type of educator. I have these words to say about him. See, remember my background, I'm really not, I'm a synthetic American, you know that, so it didn't make much sense to me what Chicago spirit was. I had come from Cuba, I went to Michigan, get everything there in Michigan, and opened my eyes by there, Columbia. So I really was not involved in the Hutchinson ideas or anything. So when Olson gave me his views of it, I liked them very much. Sort of a education of Ramirez right then and there. He was, you know, he was a Greek scholar, I believe.
He was a philosopher. Especially was.
Anyway, I had nothing but good things to say about the atmosphere there. I liked her very much. She was a musician. Eisenbach was a physicist and a philosopher. So the whole atmosphere was excellent. I'm talking about the nuclear.
Right.
Nothing but the best recollection. Smoker was my closest friend there, Bob Smoker.
In biology.
So this group was really very interesting. Siskin?
Yes, in philosophy.
Philosophy.
He was a Chicago man.
Yes. So this, in fact, it was a very, you know, a little exhilarating to get all the views there, but at that point it applied very well.
Very.
What events, what person, what experience stand out in your mind? I mentioned a couple of, you know, remarks like, I used to go out with Olson on weekends to my cabin, very informal. Very interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. Do you have any question that would redirect my thinking along those lines? I tend to be more factual than maybe you would like by particular.
What about the quality of students?
The quality of students. It was low. It was really very low. By law, compared to Columbia, dramatically low. But I never made a comparison. Sort of a challenge to work with them. There was a kid there called Mike Crew or something. They were all very interesting kids in that they were also different. I don't know whether they were these yet, but they were very fresh approach coming from that pressure cooker of Columbia College.
Yes.
They looked very naive and very appealing. Mm-hmm. And since we had only three or four of them, we worked like the Dickens.
Yeah.
I mean, they got more out of us than any in Columbia. So that's the answer to your question. The quality was very low, but I never compare it. Mm-hmm. Bananas and apples just didn't compare. What was your understanding of your own place in the future that's coming through? Why do you think you were appointed? I was the only warm-blooded organic chemist who could really accept that kind of setup. I really had no other honest explanation than that. I don't know whether Bonnet might tell you to try three or four. But I don't know.
I haven't talked to Bonner except when he was part of a group of four that went over the questions with me and went over the letter.
So my interpretation is simply that if you brought the guy who had the capability of going into a research career in the major league, and he saw that setup, he wouldn't take it if he was in the right mind, a right mind. He told me that I was not in my right mind. Well, it was different, you see. I had failed to attain tenure at Columbia. I was a foreigner. You know, I still was a Cuban citizen. I was not so naive as to think that I had an academic silver spoon of Harvard or any of that. So I say, how many chances have I got? And that was the answer.
Did you see a future, however, in the institution?
Oh, yeah. Well, definitely. I couldn't imagine that the state of New York could fail. Just, you know, this is one of the strongest, richest, most advanced state of the union. If you had been Alabama, I probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
But the state of New York couldn't possibly touch it, even though I can imagine the politics of Columbia itself, Cornell and so on. Even some of my friends at Columbia said, oh, don't get stuck in the, you know, in private they would say, we wouldn't let this get too big. Mm-hmm. You know, these things are not for publication, but you know that was the feeling of Columbia, Cornell, NYU. I never reached Rochester, but the acquaintance, circle of acquaintance, thought that this thing was a squat sooner or later, or would be an early teacher's college. So in that respect, there was a mixed feelings about my future. So it's not a very enlightened answer, and it's not a very idealistic one.
A very realistic answer. A revealing answer.
Yeah.
Very revealing. You're the first person, I think, who has given an inside picture of the attitude toward Stony Brook and the state university system of the private institution.
Oh, yeah. Of course, I mean, they would die of the torture and deny it.
Yeah.
But that was the undercurrent of their comments. They felt the politics would destroy and the lobby will help destroy. But the lobby didn't have to be that strong. Just a little push would do it. So he was really a surprise to that. And I never, maybe Harriman was the first name that comes to my mind.
Harriman, he was governor.
And then Rockefeller came. And I remember having met Rockefeller, or at least in the group that he was there at the time. So he was very involved.
Oh, he was a Phi Beta Kappa from Dartmouth.
Yeah.
You didn't have to talk to him in words of one syllable about what a university was.
It was clear to me that he had his soul into it.
Yeah.
By then, my spirit began to soar. But then everybody was soaring at that point. You remember the metaphors about the jewel and the crown. We were sitting pretty.
Yeah.
These were the heydays. I was talking about 65, 68. I was already being included in this list of the 1,000 most cited scientists. But we're talking about 59, 60, 61, and 62.
Right.
The rest of it,
nothing else.
What expectations do you have when you came?
Just push, you know, and see how far you could get.
How have these expectations worked out both personally and for the institution? Well, I'd rather not comment on that. I'm going to be factual at this point and constructive. This is a psychological question. Were your activities confined to the Stony Brook campus? No, not at all. Not at all. I really expressed the campus around, in spite of the fact that later on I was correctly accused of not spreading it enough later on. In other words, there's a paradox here. During the first 10 years, 59 to 69. My activities were not confined to Stony Brook campus at all. I attended every chemical meeting, literally, driven in the United States and abroad. I have a list here, more or less here, I'll show you. I was a real facilitator of Stony Brook, Stony Brook stuff. By 1970, for a variety of personal reasons, I began to withdraw from that supercharged public relations campaign. And then later on, I could have done more in the way of attending meetings and so on. So I wanted to buy the answer to two. So 1970, I was everywhere. In addition to that, there is a fixture here that is unique. I was a consultant for the chemical industry since 1955, very young, a result of serious circumstances. So I visited industry continuously. So I put Stony Brook in some of the large laboratories like American Cyanamid Company, Standard Oil of Indiana. I was a consultant, so there was a great deal of activity. That also cut into my time, you realize, I mean.
Sure.
So it was, do you have relations outside?
Yeah.
With the Central Oil? Never. In Albany, no. What stuff do you know now? When you feel you had a company Stony Brook by 71, I started backwards. By 71, I had accomplished a lot. And that accomplishment is recorded there. Can you name individuals who did things that were important for the future development of the university as a whole or some part of it? Oh, yes.
That means Toll or Pond or any one of the administrators or individuals.
I think paradoxically, I think my best and fondest recollection is of Olson, but paradoxically,
yes, probably closest to him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, after that, either because I did it or because the institution was too big and I wasn't playing the right key, I lost contact, as you know very well, became withdrawn. So I can't say anything. I never had any, I think, personal contact with any of them. I remember all of the names, the Hamilton along the way, not Hamilton, he was there. The engineer.
Irvine?
No. The one who came with Irvine.
One who came, President Lee?
Lee, yeah.
Oh, yes.
I remember the whole group, Lee,
yeah,
and Irvine. Then, Hamilton was there, Hamilton was in Auburn. Was he with us for a while?
Yeah.
Hamilton was the, president of the entire system.
Yeah.
They used that term at that point. And then Gould came in as chancellor.
Okay.
But Hamilton was in Albany. But when Lee was let go,
yeah,
fired, Hamilton tried to pour oil on the troubled water.
Yeah.
And couldn't do both jobs, so I think he turned it over initially to Harry Porter to even do it. At this point, I will turn the tape over to side B.